This is All In. I'm Terry Dean for Matt Pelser. The new WFYI documentary, Optimizing Life, debuts tomorrow night and highlights the stories of Hoosiers who embrace lifestyle changes to turn their health issues around. Today, we'll hear about the experiences of some of those patients, and we'll learn more about research that increasingly points to the importance of lifestyle choices, which can have a preventative impact and even help reverse some cases of chronic disease. If you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. Just give your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment, and we'll do our best to get it into the conversation. Again, that number is 866-476-3881. Joining me now is the producer of Optimizing Life, Lee DeNoon. Her new documentary premieres tomorrow on WFYI at 7:30 p.m. You can also catch it streaming online via Facebook and YouTube at the same time. It's great to have you with us, Lee.
Thanks, Terry. It's great to be here.
We're also joined by Dr. Daniel Pino, who is the Medical Director of Lifestyle Health and Wellness at Eskenazi Health. Dr. Pino, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, well, thank you for having me as well.
Lee, let's start with you about your documentary, Optimizing Life, which explores the relationships between our lifestyles and our health. What got you interested in this topic?
Terry, I've always been interested in health news, health medicine, just, you know, the newest breakthroughs in healthy choices. And so several years ago, I ran across a TEDx talk by a doctor in Iowa who had MS. And she decided, after she was very disabled, she couldn't work anymore, she started researching, you know, what foods she might eat that had been researched to show that it would help people with neurological issues. And so she went on supplements at first and didn't think they were doing much for, went off of them, and really, you know, had a bad setback with her MS, so that she went back on them. And then she decided to just eat the foods that provided those nutrients rather than taking supplements. And so it was the first I'd ever, you know, heard about food as medicine. And so what ended up happening was she ended up reversing her MS. She, you know, was able to, within several months, you know, be able to go back to work, was up walking, was riding her bike after a year. And so it just really intrigued me. And then there was a conference in Indianapolis in 2013 about food as medicine, and I covered that. And so it was kind of after hearing more stories about that and actually how much research had already gone into food as medicine at that point that I thought, you know, this is really important that people should know that by changing their diets and by doing other things with their lifestyles, that they can actually have a really big impact on their health. So that's kind of where this all came about.
Dr. Pino, there's increasing research around the connection between lifestyle choices and chronic disease. Can you explain what role lifestyle medicine plays in that?
Yeah, of course. You know, as a whole, when we think about chronic disease and how much of an impact it has in our community and in our lives, there's a lot of different ways we've tried to approach both prevention and treatment. And the more we've seen in the last several years, research come out in regards to simple actions such as eating and exercise that have been impactful on day-to-day activities, but also things like stress and sleep and tobacco use and alcohol use and building relationships, which is the key components and pillars of lifestyle medicine. As individual components, they're each proven to be unique in how they affect chronic disease. But together, when you approach it as a holistic approach, there's been some prominent evidence that demonstrates their ability to be effective, if not as effective and maybe at times more effective than some of the medicines that we've learned to use over years of treating patients. And so it's an opportunity for individuals to see those sides of their life and engage in them in a new way. And it's not just because they're good actions, but it's because they are proven and evidence-based practices to prevent and treat a majority of what we see in both the clinics and in the hospital setting.
Dr. Pino, can you explain what kind of conditions fall under the umbrella of chronic disease? And is chronic disease reversible if one makes good lifestyle changes?
Yeah, absolutely. And so chronic disease is a big umbrella term. And it's slightly different than what Lee had brought up earlier about multiple sclerosis, which is a specific type of chronic disease that lasts a long time. When you think of as a generic term, we often put in the category diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, even in times when we look at obesity and how that affects those components. But it can also be in other avenues of health, like multiple sclerosis. But the ones that are most commonly looked at here are those three big ones that affect what we call metabolic syndrome, or some of those spaces that lead to both those acute events like heart attacks and strokes. And so those are those ones that we have been really focusing on in regards to seeing each component treat that. And absolutely, there have been cases and there's been evidence showing that there is not just prevention, but at times reversal of these components and these specific diagnoses.
Lee, in your research for your documentary, Optimizing Life, did you get a sense for how prevalent chronic diseases are among people in the U.S.?
Oh, my gosh, Sherry. It's like incredible how many people have chronic diseases. It's like more than half of the people in the U.S. have a chronic disease, and 40% have two or more. So it's a lot of us.
I'm just curious, the people that you talked to for your documentary, did they realize they had a chronic disease? Were they attempting to make better choices, or did they have the mindset, well, I just have this, and so that's what it is. I'll just live with it.
So both. Dave Foster of South Bend had heart disease, clearly had heart disease. He'd had a stent put in. He'd had bypasses. He had diabetes. So he was on, insulin and medication for his diabetes. So he was aware of those. And he admitted that his physician had suggested, early on that he could change his diet and it would be helpful. But it wasn't until, it got to the point where he was told he needed a heart transplant that really got his attention. For the South Bend police officer, the homicide investigator that I interviewed, he, was in his early 40s and wasn't really overweight. And so his heart attack came out of the blue. He was not aware that he had heart disease. And Sharana Moore is the same. Sharana's going to join us in a little bit, I think. And she also was in her early 40s and had a heart attack out of the blue. Yeah. Another one of the women I featured in the film is a patient and a nurse at Eskenazi Health there in Indianapolis. And she has diabetes. And so she decided that checking out lifestyle medicine was something that she needed to do because it was an avenue that she had not tried before to help manage her diabetes. So, both cases run across.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Pino, you oversee the Lifestyle Medicine Clinic at Eskenazi Health. Tell us how the clinic works.
Yeah. So we had started this clinic about a year and a half ago, and it was after some discussions amongst our leadership, who you see on the film, Lisa Harris is on there. And we began it as an opportunity to treat ourselves first. I think that even Dr. Cherney on the film talks about treat thyself, right? And our goal was to be able to say that if we're going to give this care, we want to be in action in our own lives. And the opportunity arose to use our employee health center or wellness health clinic as a space for that engaging conversation. And how we operate really is just a recruitment amongst ourselves. So like Lee mentioned, we have a nurse that's come through there. We have many nurses that come through there. We've also opened up the doors for those that are in our larger system because we connect with the health and hospital system. And so we have people from Marion County Health Department and Indianapolis EMS. And we invited everyone that gives care to come to the table. And I say that both figuratively and literally, because what we began to build in a model of care was based on group settings. And you don't have to be in the group setting. We know that it's not always the way which people like to interact, but we wanted to focus on that as an opportunity to bring to life the relationship, which is a huge part of the lifestyle medicine change. And it literally is a table, just like I'm actually sitting at my dining room table right now, and this is very much what my clinic looks like in that space. And we invited people from all over the system to come down. And after a quick introduction with myself and our dietitian and our Healthy Me coach, who all work together in one site, specifically engaging in care, we determine a best avenue for each patient. Also, there's opportunities for people to engage in just groups that aren't necessarily specific to a disease that they have, but an opportunity to learn. And we formed a model of care in a space that is centered around a group of about 10 individuals. And we go through a series of topics, and it's really about facilitating the conversation around these practices in lifestyle medicine, whether it be exercise, whether it be eating habits, whether it be how stress affects both our lives and those components. And it's a beautiful place for us to not only learn together, but learn from each other in a way that makes the parts of care more tangible and more effective. And so it's really a multifaceted approach. It's a holistic approach, and it involves myself as a physician, Lisa Harris as a physician, and also one of our dietitians, Lindsay, who's in the film, and Megan, who's a health coach. And we all work together in the care of individuals that are working together as a community learning to be healthy.
We've been talking to Lee Dinoon, the producer of the new WFYI documentary, Optimizing Life, as well as the gentleman you just heard, Dr. Daniel Pino, the medical director of lifestyle health and wellness at Eskenazi Health. Now, they will be with us for the rest of the hour. Up next, we'll hear from a man in South Bend who credits lifestyle changes as what saved him from a heart transplant. As always, we'll take your questions and comments on social media. What questions do you have about lifestyle medicine and how to incorporate it into your life? Have these habits worked for you? Let us know on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Terry D. Back in 90 seconds. This is All In. All In. I'm Terry D. in for Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about lifestyle medicine and how some people have improved or reversed their chronic conditions through lifestyle changes. Have changes to your diet, exercise routine, or support system made a difference in your health? How do you implement and stick to that change? As always, we want to hear from you. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. Or you can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. We're joined again via Skype by the producer of the new WFYI documentary, Optimizing Life, Lee Dinoon, and Dr. Daniel Pino, who is the medical director of lifestyle health and wellness at Eskenazi Health. Now, we also like to bring into the conversation Mr. Dave Foster, a patient who embraced lifestyle changes from South Bend to the conversation. Dave, great to have you with us.
Hi there.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Great. Great to be here.
Well, Dave, we've been talking about the impact that diet, exercise, and well-being can have on chronic diseases. So if we can rewind just a few years, tell us about the major health conditions that you were once facing.
Well, I had diabetes. Who knows how long I've had that, but diagnosed with diabetes, and really didn't know I had any heart problems until I went to my cardiologist, and he says, good news and bad news. Bad news is you had a heart attack. Good news is you're alive.
Wow.
So it started from there. First trip to cath lab, no stents. It actually ended up with bypass surgery in 2013. And then in 2015, back to the cath lab, I was told I needed a heart transplant. Luckily, Memorial Hospital was putting on Dr. Ornish's program, Reversing Heart Disease. So within 60 days of being on the program, my heart function was back up and no need for, the heart transplant. And within a year, it was up even more. So it's quite amazing. It does work.
What kind of day-to-day challenges did those illnesses present in your life? And did you heed the signs, or did you just kind of shrug it off, and account it to stress or just a bad day or a tiring day?
You know, I didn't know I had the heart attack or heart attacks at all. I had a silent one. I mean, as a medic, I was always wondering, you know, when am I going to be in the back of the ambulance? I'm picking all these other people up with a heart attack. When is mine? And so really didn't know I had it. So as far as the heart problems, I was just doing my normal thing. And then the day-to-day activities got to be a little more difficult with the, like she said, trying to take the trash out of the curb, I get really short of breath. The diabetes was off and on. It was very hard to control until I went on the program, onto a plant-based diet, and it's well under control. Medications are way down, a third of what I was taking originally. And so the challenges were just trying to keep the diabetes under control. You know, the A1C was up and down, up and down, up and down. So now it's been nice and steady. I haven't really slowed down. I just continue to do what I do every day.
Eventually, Dave, you were told that you would need a heart transplant. What was it like to get that news, and what options were presented to you?
Well, it was devastating because we were adopting a baby, a newborn, and she was 3 months at the time, we were told. So, I mean, I'm sure it's like a person being told they got cancer. It's like, oh, my God, what now? You know, it's like, I'm adopting this baby. Am I going to be around to see her grow up? So they sent me down to Indianapolis to IU Med to see a specialist. And they gave me, well, they didn't give me an option. They were debating whether I could do another bypass or transplant. And I actually flat out told them, I'm not going to need your services because I'm on this program and I'm going to beat it. And I just kind of blew it off and said, yeah, whatever. So kind of proved them wrong.
Lee, my question for you, the Amish, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Amish or Amish?
Ornish,
thank you. Reversal program at Beacom Health that Dave participated in is a program featured in the documentary Optimizing Life. Can you talk about how the program operates?
Okay, so let me first tell you about Dr. Dean Ornish, who was in medical school in the late 70s and was doing the very first lifestyle medicine clinical studies around, you know, that time in the early 80s. So he was, you know, studying what people's diets are, you know, what exercise they get, how they de-stress. So he developed this program to help people, you know, better manage their stress, eat better, and through clinical studies was able to show that their heart disease got better, actually even started reversing. And so once that clinical study was complete, he thought, you know, let's have Medicare and Medicaid give this the stamp of approval as a way of, you know, treating people. But that process took like over 10 years. It took a very long time to prove to Medicaid that this was actually, you know, a working treatment. And so finally, that was approved by Medicare and Medicaid to be used, lifestyle medicine to be used to actually, you know, treat or better manage, or even in some cases, reverse heart disease. And so his program is now offered at different medical facilities. It's no longer offered at Beacon Health in South Bend. It's now offered at Goshen Health in Northern Indiana. But I believe that that's the only site still operating in Indiana, but it's at other sites throughout the country. And it's somewhat difficult to get this program into hospital settings because hospitals make money off of treating people. And this program uses things that, you know, are readily available to people, food and exercise and learning how to de-stress. So it's hard for this program to make money for a hospital. So it's not as prevalent in hospitals across the country.
Dave, what was your experience like with the program? Specifically, how did your diet change? What foods were you suggested to eat more of, and what foods were you told, you know what, Dave, you might want to just kind of lay off those foods? Tell us about that.
Well, I didn't really, I can't say told you to lay off anything. What they did is they actually had, part of the training was what foods were good to eat, and that was the plant-based items. Getting rid of milk, they wanted to get rid of milk, meat, no oil. So it was just a matter of, you know, finding those vegetarian, well, not really vegetarian, but plant-based diets to eat. And I was dealing with three arteries that were 100% blocked. And here, you know, adopting the baby, it's like, I'm going to beat this. So I really pushed and made sure I was eating. They give you a list of foods that they want you to eat daily, like the whole grains and vegetables and fruits and how much of them. And so they really lay it out for you that it's easy to follow. I mean, if you've got a good reason and, you know, having a three-year-old baby, you have a good reason, it's really easy to stick to. I've been doing it now for almost 5 years. And I'm feeling great, doing better now than I have in a long time.
Dr. Pino, can you explain on the topic of diet for just a moment here? What guidance do you give to patients at the Lifestyle Medicine Clinic?
I love what Dave just said there when he said adding foods that are good to eat, right? And the guidance we tend to give is meeting people where they're at and trying to help bring up an awareness of what are those foods, right? A lot of times in our Western diet, we are distracted by what's presented to us in a larger scale, and it's often not great foods for us. A lot of it are processed grains, a lot of it's processed sugar, lots of high sugar, actually. And a lot of the drinks we drink are often high sugar. And so we start very simple with, let's bring to the table the conversation about what is good to eat. And that opens up the door in the conversation about everybody's understanding. And then we do look into the space of what we know is very good for us. And David already mentions these, is the whole grains, the fruits, the vegetables, the whole food plant-based perspective. And trying to identify where you already get those sources and bringing them up in your diet, and then looking at the parts that are really bad for us, right? And there's a lot of different perspectives out there on this, but we all know that processed grain, processed sugar are very bad. And those are a ton of what we eat in a Western diet. And so not only identifying, you know, but really our focus is on awareness and then bringing people into a place where they can start to make those changes. What Dave went through in the Ornish Reversal Program, it's a very strategic path, right? And he was motivated. He had an opportunity to get there, and not all of us are there yet. And we sometimes need an awareness to begin, and that's what we try to do as we build the behaviors.
All right.
What really helps with the Ornish program is the support, and all the participants are family. We have an alumni page, and so we can bounce ideas off people. If we get tired of, we need a different choice of something to eat that's, you know, Ornish friendly, you know, somebody on the website will, you know, pop up and try it. So having the support is definitely, definitely crucial. And the yoga, the stress management.
It's a beautiful program. It's a very beautiful program.
I have a listener here, Jessie, through Facebook, who says she's a registered dietitian, who says her experience oftentimes is that doctors immediately prescribe medication, but she says she would like to see doctors incorporate nutrition more into treating a patient. So how are you seeing that, Dr. Pino, where doctors are more and more looking at nutrition instead of immediately bringing out the script pad and writing out a prescription for a pill or a tonic of some sort?
I'd like to say we're seeing it more and more. And that might just be my optimism. The truth is it's a combination of multiple reasons why we do that. And I think Lee brought up a good point it's about a system that is often driven around productivity and outcomes regarding usage. And so we're in a system that gives us very little time to have the conversation often. And so movements like Lifestyle Medicine and movements like what Lee puts out in this documentary that shows us how we can do this differently, it's been a conversation amongst physicians for a long time. And Even in the video, Dr. Cherney, or in the documentary, Dr. Cherney talks about doctors want to do this. And I think that that is happening. And we see it both in social media where people are making their voices heard. We see it in hospitals like our own at Eskenazi Health. It's making and being a front leader in this and making steps to make sure that in all of our primary care sites, we have an opportunity as doctors and nurse practitioners and physician's assistants to have the conversation. And when we can't do it, we need the support of a dietitian. We need the support of a healthy meat coach. And actually, it's not just when we can't do it. We need it, period. And so I'm optimistic that we're getting there. And I think that a movement, you know, lifestyle medicine is one of the fastest growing fields of medicine right now. And it's because we see it as an opportunity to impact life and impact health in a way that's really unique. And it helps, like this listener said, sometimes I come into that office and I'm guilty of it, right? If I don't have time, sometimes it's hard to stop and say, hey, what are you looking for today? And I think what you're looking for is an opportunity to change your life, not just a pill. And so we really need to focus on that every day and try to do that better.
I have a question for first to Lee and then to Dave. Lee, the Ornish Reversal Program doesn't just focus on diet and fitness, but also incorporates aspects like love and support and stress management. And what was the thinking behind that? And then, Dave, my question to you, were you at all skeptical that these emotional elements were going to help improve your heart function? Let's go first with Lee.
So, you know, that was the most surprising thing to me was to interview Carl Karch, this homicide detective up in South Bend, and hear him say how important the group therapy was, because he was not a person that wanted to talk to people about his feelings, but he discovered that by sharing what he was going through and learning how to de-stress and, you know, deal with all of the things that were going on to his life that you know, helped play into his heart disease, he was really surprised that, like, this was one of the most beneficial things for him. And so he made a very good friend in this group in the Ornish Reversal Program, and they're still in touch today. And you know, Dave talked about the support as well, you know, finding different recipes for something, but also it's just that human connection that we really don't think about that is just fundamental to humans being healthy. And so we've gotten away from that. We're away from that more and more with our devices and our phones and not talking to each other. And so, you know, that's what really surprised me. And I'm trying to implement changes in my life as well to better connect to people. So, yeah.
And Dave, your feelings on the emotional elements of your...
I didn't believe really any of that stuff, maybe my diet. I was at the very least hoping that it would stop the disease, but who knew it would reverse it? And like Carl said, I mean, the importance of the group is just amazing. I mean, it is one of the biggest portions most of us feel, not just the diet. It is very important to have an emotional contact and the stress management. You know, yeah, yoga, okay, yeah, it's not going to work. But I found, you know, being a medic was stressful. And being able to de-stress, you know, with an hour of yoga, I mean, it's great. I mean, I never thought it would be, but yeah, it's definitely two important parts of the program.
And how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. I mean, the cholesterol level, the LDL was 41.
Wow.
So,
good
and,
for you.
Yeah, triglycerides right you down, blood sugar, again, right? Blood sugar is under control. And now there is a doctor, my endocrinologist, and his dietitian. I can't get them to understand the Ornish program. They keep trying to put me on the diabetic diet, which I tried for years and never worked. Too hard to understand. And so I just kind of go in, I listen to him, and continue doing what I'm doing, you know?
Dr. Pino, we have about 60 seconds before our break. Tell us how important it is to address the aspects of emotional support when it comes to implementing lifestyle changes.
Wait, 60 seconds for that. For me, it's the part that we know it's probably the more important part. I think Dr. Ornish even said that at the end of the documentary, and he talks about how our world affects us. And it goes from childhood I mean, this is incredible evidence behind what happens in childhood to adulthood. And we know as adults that what we're asked to do from between our families and our work, it becomes stress, right? And stress leads to specific responses in our body that lead to outcomes that include what we eat, how we exercise, right? It can shape what we desire. And so the opportunity to step back and simplify it, as well as connect with others, is really important.
This is All In. I'm Terry D. Back now to our discussion on lifestyle medicine and the new WFYI documentary, Optimizing Life, which takes a look at new research around health and lifestyle, as well as some of the stories of Hoosiers who have benefited from these changes. And as always, we love to hear from you with your questions and comments. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. Before we get back to our guests, I want to share with you a message we received from Julia on Facebook. She says she's in her mid-30s, has a family history of heart disease and other heart conditions. She says her nurse practitioner would not refer her to a cardiologist until she told her the nurse practitioner that her smartwatch caught signs of atrial fibrillation. See, the medical terms throw me every time. Fibrillation. Yeah. So her question is, how do you find a provider who embraces your desire to seek preventative help?
Was that for anybody?
Yes.
Or
anyone?
All right, good. Yeah, I'm glad to help answer with that. A lot of times there's each location will tend to advertise this. For me, I know that I can say that the majority of our providers at Eskenazi Health embrace this, and it's something we're building into each one of our clinics. And if you need a stopping point for that, we would definitely be happy to help out with you at our locations. But one thing I would look into each website and see if they offer dietitian and nutrition advice as a part of their programming is a good place to start, depending on where you're at. If you're in the Eskenazi area, though, please reach out to us at Eskenazi Health. And I can provide numbers for that at the end of this if we'd like that, because we'd be glad to take you into our programs and help you out with that.
Thank you for that. We're back with the show here with the film's producer, Lee Dinoon, as well as Dr. Daniel Pino, who was the medical director of lifestyle health and wellness at Eskenazi Health. We're also bringing in an additional guest, Sharana Moore. She is the founder of Lawrence Community Gardens in Indianapolis. Welcome, Sharana.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
As we mentioned, you're the founder of Lawrence Community Garden, which is helping to make fresh produce accessible to folks in your community. But there was a time when you experienced a health scare. Can you talk about what happened to you?
Well, at 43 years old, I had a heart attack. It started when I was asleep, and I woke up to the heart attack. I have two young children that were here in the house with me, and I felt like I was going to die. I knew I was going to die. I made it to get them to school, and by the time I came back, I collapsed at the door. I was talking to a friend of mine on the phone, and I was telling her what my symptoms were, still not even thinking that I was having a heart attack. She said, "This is serious, Sharana." So she was on the phone with me when I collapsed. She called the ambulance. Fast forward, I got to the hospital. They said, "Yep, you had a heart attack. We're going to have to do surgery in the morning and put a stent in." And so that changed my life, and it changed my perception of life, my eating habits, and it started me on a new journey toward having a more healthier lifestyle.
Did you know you were at risk for a heart attack? Did this catch you by surprise, or had there been signs along the way?
Well, heart disease runs in my family. I was having some high blood pressure, but not a lot. So I was like on a half of a dose of blood pressure medicine. But it was stress, and it was my lifestyle. It was eating bad, eating all at the wrong times, and eating just not watching what I eat, not getting enough water, not getting enough rest, and an abundance of stress.
What were the biggest challenges for you in the beginning as you were making these changes?
I love fried food. So that was the biggest challenge. I had to retrain my mind on how to eat better. So I bought a Ninja juicer and smoothie maker, and I also bought an air fryer. I learned how to make vegetables, and I actually just stopped eating meat cold turkey. So I gave up meat, I gave up salt, I gave up cholesterol, and I gave up processed foods, and I started eating more whole foods, raw foods. And so I always tell people that I grow my medicine at my garden.
And we know that support and access to tools to make positive changes can be a key factor, but also can be a hurdle for so many. Where does the Lawrence Community Garden fit into this?
Lawrence Community, you grow up eating. In my family, we ate a lot of meat, a lot of pork. We had big Sunday dinners with macaroni and cheese and candy sweet potatoes with a bunch of butter in it. And all the greens had meat in them. And so, you know, Lawrence Community Garden gave me an avenue to be able to reach people through fresh organic foods, right? So I started learning how to cook my own vegetables growing out there, and I had always awarded an opportunity through Oak Street Health to do food demonstrations. So not only am I a food producer, but I'm a distributor and a food educator. So now I'm able to go out and teach people the health benefits of the foods that we grow and how they can help them to reverse their heart conditions or their diet-related illnesses.
Dr. Pino, what do we know about who is most likely to suffer from chronic disease? Are there populations at higher risk than others?
Absolutely. We know that food resourcing matters, and like in Lawrence Gardens and Community Gardens, and where in that area where there's a food desert, or there might have been a food desert in parts throughout the city, we know that minority populations are also at a higher risk, and it is multifaceted, but a lot of it was regarding food resourcing. And the opportunity to access good, healthy food plays a huge role in that. And the money behind the systems of how we live are often a contributing factor. And so it's a vast array from genetic components, but also significantly impacted by environmental aspects, which include socioeconomic determinants of health. And this is a big topic right now through the city. And the majority of what we're trying to focus on in each level of accomplishing access has to do with chronic disease, and it's about resources available to communities. And so things like the Lawrence Community Gardens is incredibly important in what they do. And I really am glad to be on the phone call with you, Sharona, about what you're doing over there.
Thank you.
How has the pandemic affected those high-risk populations? Have you seen any impact at the clinic?
100% impact. We not only do we know that from having an underlying disorder, diseases like diabetes and high blood pressure can affect your outcome in coronavirus, but it's bringing to light a lot of the gaps in the system and the ability to access both day-to-day needs as well as food. And fortunately, within our own city, we've seen many people interacting in a way that's helping resource that in this time when we've seen many people lose jobs. And we know that it's higher predominance of jobs being lost in the communities that are already affected by this. And it's been both a beautiful sight to see the community come together, but also a terrifying sight when we know that there's more to come. And the impact of coronavirus currently is more based on the infection and the long-term effect over the job security of anybody within these type of situations are going to be difficult. But from a health perspective, it's certainly a large impact.
I saw the documentary Optimizing Life, and there was mention of food deserts. And Lee, access to healthy food is a big factor to health, but even when you have access, it can be hard to adopt entirely new habits. What did you hear from the individuals you interviewed in the documentary about the challenges of making these transitions?
So a lot of the people that I interviewed were, adopted these changes because of a crisis, a heart attack, or, Sherry Hollingsworth, who is a nurse, a registered nurse there at Eskenazi, and she's battled diabetes for a long time and she's overweight. And so for her, it was Eskenazi Health opening a new clinic, a lifestyle medicine clinic, that it was something new she could try to help address the issues she's had with dealing with her diabetes. it's really difficult. I mean, people really, if you don't have a crisis facing you, it's really difficult to convince people that making lifestyle choices is the right thing to do. So it's another reason why, you know, this type of medicine isn't everywhere. It's because, you know, it takes a commitment, a personal commitment from people to actually improve their health. But, you know, what's great is that once you decide in your mind that this is what you want to do, you know, that this is the right path, then I think that's when people have started seeing successes. And for people who have been in crisis, you know, that's almost been a given that they're going to, you know, adhere to this better. And for others, you know, it takes, you know, just working on setting that mindset that this is the right thing to do to be healthier.
Sharona, what kind of reaction or feedback did you hear from your community about the garden? And are there opportunities at the garden for people to learn about food and nutrition?
Well, the kind of things that I hear from people at the garden are like, wow, you were 43 when you had a heart attack. Hmm. What you're doing is so great. And it was true what Lee said about how people don't make changes until the life situation happens. So the situation happens, and that's when they want to make changes. The garden affords me an opportunity to talk to people about my situation and to testify about how my life has changed. My energy level has changed. My physical stamina has changed. My body has physically changed because of my lifestyle change. So the garden is an avenue for me to reach people, and not just some people, young people. The kids that come through our program, through our youth program, are 12 to 15 years old and sometimes younger. So I'm able to start them and start explaining to them the importance of food and proper nutrition early and exposing them to how to do this for themselves. You don't have to depend on the grocery store to provide you with the avenue or to reverse your condition. When I left the hospital, I was taking 9 pills a day, and I'm down to 3 pills a day. So that tells you, over the last 3 years, I've been able to control, maintain, and consistently reverse my heart condition.
Mm-hmm. Let's expand more on education. And Dr. Pino, I'll address this question to you. What type of education should a parent, for example, give to their child? And when is a good age to start that education?
I think that starting with vegetables, right, which is the hardest part, and when you're young, right, or we deem the hardest part, is a good beginning. There's a good format for a conversation about this, and it's about no sugary drinks and increasing your fruits and vegetables, and then exercising on a regular basis. And it's a simple way in which you can approach this. And there's an acronym, it's a statement, it's a 5-2-1-0. So it's 5 fruits and vegetables a day, less than 2 hours of screen time, participate in 1 hour of physical activity, and 0 sugary drinks. And I think that's an easy stepping point. The harder part is actually implementing it in your own life as a parent. And if we can demonstrate that and show that we are participating in that as well, it's easier for our kids to see and replicate that in their own lives. But it's never too early to start. It's never too early to ask yourself, what can I do? And it's a good place to begin is just say, can I eat one extra vegetable today? Can I go and take my kids to the garden, like the Lawrence Community Gardens? Can I go demonstrate something that's happening in our community that's tangible and important to us all? And that's really the beginning stages of it.
Sharona, what are the resources that you would still like to see more available in your community, and what kind of support would allow for people to live healthier lifestyles?
Well, in my community, first off, we are a food desert. There are only 3 grocery stores in our neighborhood, and none of those grocery stores are accessible by public transportation. This is about systemic change, more or less, than anything, right? They built a lot of apartments and this community up without enough resources for the people. So it is a challenge even for a mother of 2 kids. Maybe you have one in a stroller and one who's walking, but how is she getting her food if she doesn't have a car? How does she get her food? It's a challenge. So a lot of people are eating from the gas stations and from the you buy refried type of convenience stores in the neighborhood, and it's sad. you know, that we need more infrastructure and resources for people to get around and to access the food in the neighborhood. Lawrence Community Garden is just one avenue, one way that people, we have a UPIC for free section. We grow food specifically for the pantry. 50% of what we grow goes to pantries, which is where a lot of, most of the people who have chronic diseases are going to get their food. So we felt like food equality was an important issue for us, and that people, just because you can't afford food, that doesn't mean you should have less access to it. So,
Dr. Pino, someone's listening and they're saying, you know what, it's too late. I'm too old. I'm in too poor shape to commit to making lifestyle changes. What would you say to that person?
You're wrong. <I'm just kidding. laughs> But I would say that. We would say, no, it's not, right? I don't like using negative language, but there actually are wrong if you think that. And it's not just demonstrated in anecdotal hit like stories. There's actually been papers released that at 65, if you start making changes, you can still impact your life. And so it's never too late to make a change. And what happens is, you know, when we were talking about stress, right, we were talking about the need for community. When that thought creeps in our mind is when we first put a barrier up to what we are able to do. And we always like to talk about in our program, what can I do today, right? What is something that we can start doing? What is some good food that we can start bringing into our diet? And even those simple changes at any age can start to make an impact that is impactful for years to come, whether it's 10 more years that you think you have left, or it's 20 more years or 50 more years. It's absolutely an opportunity to start living your best life right now. And so don't let that creep in. And the need for community is when we have friends and family and communities together that say, you can do this and it is good for you. And I heard the word testify earlier, and that makes my heart jump for joy, because when we testify to each other, that when we present that as an opportunity, it helps each other out tremendously.
All right, we'll leave it at there. Dr. Daniel Pino, who is the Medical Director of Lifestyle Health and Wellness at Eskenazi Health, thank you for your time today. Sharana Moore, she's the founder of Lawrence Community Gardens in Indianapolis. Thank you for joining us today. And Lee Danoon, the producer of WFYI's new documentary, Optimizing Life. The documentary debuts tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m., and you can catch the broadcast or find it streaming online. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Gellin. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Our show is engineered by Adam Gross. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Join us tomorrow at 1 p.m. when we revisit a conversation about the Indiana Prison Writers Workshop. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Terry D. Thanks for listening. This is All In.